Welcome to You've Got This with Sarah Hammaker, a podcast to encourage and equip moms along their parenting journey. Join Sarah each week as she interviews dads and moms like you and discusses the joys, challenges, and rewards of raising kids.
Hi, and welcome to this week's You've Got This. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker, and I have Lori Wildenberg with me today. She's a mom of four and a Mimi to one. I have a Mimi in my kids' lives as well. She's passionate about helping families build connections that last a lifetime. She co-founded 1 Corinthians 13 Parenting Ministry. She's a lead mentor mom with Moms Together Facebook community. I'm a member of that group, Moms, and it's great, so join if you can. She's a national speaker and a parent coach, and she recently wrote The Messy Life of Parenting. That's her fifth parenting book. For more information, go to her website, and I'll have that posted on the link to this podcast. So, Lori, messy parenting, the messy life of parenting. I love that because don't we want parenting to be neat and put in little boxes instead of messy, right?
We so want that. We want our life to be put in a neat little box. And we think we can have that when we first start having kiddos. We start thinking, well, if I follow a particular formula, then this will surely work out properly. And life is lived in the unexpected, isn't it? And our kids are little humans with human frailty and human strong will, just as we are. And life gets a little messy, and it even did in the Garden of Eden.
Right. And as as Christian moms, I think we take too much on ourselves to keep our lives from getting messy, don't we? We think, well, because I'm a follower of Christ, I should have this all together. This should be easy. And we often get in situations where it's not, and it looks really bad in our eyes. But it's, like you said, it's just normal. This is just the way life is sometimes.
Oh, exactly, Sarah. And, I think if we had it all together and did everything perfectly and our kids did everything perfectly, I mean, just think of it. How would our little ones ever learn empathy for anyone else if life was always perfect for them? Compassion would never be developed in a person who's never experienced at least a little struggle or a little suffering. And so the trials in our life actually help develop a good character, not only in terms of like a godly character, but a loving character toward other people.
That's so true, Lori. And I think we forget that much of what we go through in life is a learning experience, even for us as parents. It's learning mm-hmm. that our plan for the day is not necessarily the best plan for the day. I remember this used to frustrate me especially when my kids were little. I'm a writer and I do as well as a parent coach, and I do, I work from home, and there would be days when I'm like, I had my to-do list and the kids were supposed to be off either at school or napping or playing. And then one of them comes to me and says, "Mommy, I don't feel well." And I'm just like, "What? You can't be sick today." or they're just woke up out of sorts, or they drop the milk on the floor and now there's no milk. There was just some days it was just something that really just kind of, it was almost as if God was saying, "Okay, I know you have your agenda, and our agendas are not bad things to have. But it's when we put those first and we don't look at into the eyes of our little children or big children and say, you are more important than my agenda. And our spouse, you are more important than our agenda." And that we need to be willing to have those little course corrections, even though a sick child is no fun. No fun for the child, no fun for mom, no fun for dad, And so I think we forget that the messiness that our lives become are really, they're good for our hearts as well.
Oh, right. What else could teach us how to be less selfish than having a child who has needs that we need to tend to, no matter what our list is? So, exactly. It is parenting grows us. And I think it helps us understand the heart of God as well, on how he feels about his children, us, and how much love and really how he does, he sets things out for us so that we can live well, just as we try to do for our kids. And sometimes they step off that path. And, you know, it just, I really think that that gives us a whole different perspective on who God is as well.
It does. And I think it also helps us, makes me very humble and grateful that, you know, I have four children as well. And I think I have a big responsibility to them. And it's not so much that they line up perfectly and they do everything right, but that I help to show them through their mistakes and their successes, you know, the face of God, that I help them to point their hearts to seek God when they have great things to think about and when they are struggling with things. It's all that whole kind of everything all wrapped up in there. And that's such an awesome responsibility, one that can make one a little afraid that we're going to do something wrong. But again, that's where I think grace comes in. And then with your book, I think, you know, The Messy Life of Parenting, I think that's where, you know, it really comes down to it, because parenting is messy, but that doesn't mean that that's not how God wants us to live.
Right, right. He wants us to live a real life, not a perfect life. You know, we are raising real, authentic children, not perfect children. And we're raising kids who are going to need to be able to learn how to love others and love God. And that's where we learn things, like you were saying, Sarah, in the messiness of life, where you learn to set aside maybe an agenda so that you can maybe show some affection or concern or care for another person. And that is hard to do, especially if you're a list person and someone who likes to accomplish things. And with parenting, a lot of the benefits you see are more long-term down the road. You don't always have some great feedback right in the middle of the mess. And that can be really hard. And I think we've made it even harder by putting out our highlight reels, so to speak, on social media. And to be so careful with that, because everybody has a messy life. Every single person, and everybody's got something going on that you may or may not be aware of. And when we compare our situations to somebody else, we tend to compare to someone who we think is better. And what I do with many of the groups that I speak to, because I think this is a really a big issue, a big hurdle right now, because it causes people not to seek out resources or not to, you know, talk to other parents about what's really going on, is that I say to the group, okay, I want everyone to say out loud, I am not the perfect parent. And easily everyone can do that. And then I'll say, now this will be a little bit harder, but I want you to turn to the people at either side of you and say, and you aren't either. And they say it and everybody laughs, but it's awkward. And then I have them point to me and say, and she isn't either, because none of us are the perfect parent. And we need to get real with each other so we can help each other and encourage each other and empower each other on this really important journey. And even the perfect parent had imperfect children, right? Even God, the perfect father, had imperfect children, Adam and Eve. So why would we ever think that there's somebody out there who's got it more perfectly than God? No one does. Everyone's going to have a child who's going to struggle, and they are also going to struggle. But like you have said, in the struggles is really where we learn.
Yeah, that's so true, Lori. And I, you know, in my speaking and in my writing and in my interviews with podcast guests, you know, I always try to emphasize the fact that, yeah, I maybe have some great parenting advice and I can help you be a better parent, but mm-hmm. mostly because I've been there. I mean, I've yelled at my kids. I yelled at one of my kids last night. There you go.
Yeah. Yep.
And it was imperfect. And I was like, I knew I shouldn't have done it. And of course, when you're more self-aware and you have a little more confidence in your parenting, you can correct yourself and go, you know, that was wrong, son.
Right.
I should not have done that. I doesn't matter why. I should not have done that. And because our kids need to learn how to recover from mistakes.
Yes.
And if we're trying
to make them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not just recover from them, but it's okay to make them because the people who love you will forgive you. And, you know, it takes away so much pride, really.
It does. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more that we're willing to apologize for our own mishaps and our own frailties as human beings, and the more that we show forgiveness to our kids, sometimes I have talked to parents who I can tell are still just really angry at their children or a child. It's usually one particular child, as I'm sure when they have multiple children. There's usually one. And, you know, I can just tell that they are just so still so angry at that child because they have not forgiven that child for disrupting the household, for whatever that child has done. And part of the thing I think we forget as parents is we're so focused on end results, goals, right? We want the child to stop doing X. So we just keep focusing on X. And we forget about the fact that that child, even they're struggling to overcome X, still needs our love, still needs us to show him or her our love with those little connections throughout the day. Because when we lose that connection, as I'm sure you found in your parenting talks and experience, you know, the kid gives up. I think that's the saddest thing when we see a child who has lost hope of recovering.
Right.
And especially when that kid is like 7, 8, you know, I've coached parents who I can tell from what they're telling me that the only thing they're focusing on is the negative because this child has been disrupting the household and they've lost their connection with the child. And so the child feels that loss, doesn't want to change. And they're in this cycle. So did you have any, how do you encourage parents to connect with their kids? Let's talk about that, because I think
that's such a great question. So we always know what we don't want, right? We know we don't want impatient kids. We don't want kids to demonstrate anger in a way that is destructive. So I'll say to parents, okay, think of the thing you don't want, because we always know what we don't want.
Oh yeah, that's easy.
And now. Right? And now we're going to think of the thing that we want. Look at what you don't want and think of the opposite. So let's say a child is not cooperative. You know, they're not obedient, they might say, or they don't listen well, quote unquote. Then the thing to work on is to work on a cooperative heart and to start noticing the times and build up those times when cooperation is demonstrated and to focus on that and to use that as a word. Or let's say someone is really sassy, then you think, well, you know, you're not being respectful. So respect is the thing to work on. And then you concentrate on that particular facet for a period of time because something else will come up later. And think about how can you reinforce respect in the family and continue to make connections in the brain regarding respect, because what you want to do is change the heart. We always have a short-term goal. That's just getting kids to do what we want them to do, right? Typically cooperate. And then we've got the long-term goal, which is really the most important goal because it will eventually affect the short-term goal. But the long-term goal is character building. And we want to build these various character traits in our kids. And the way to build them is to focus on the thing that you want and to continue to talk about that, because that makes those connections in the brain and it makes parenting much more intentional and more laser focused on the thing that you're trying to work on. And so rather than say something like, you were disrespectful, go to your room and you think about that. What happens when you do something like that is not only do you separate the child from you, like you're bad, you have to go away, but they're concentrating on and thinking about what they did wrong, and you are creating more connections in the brain than with the thing that you're trying to extinguish. So rather, you can do one of two things. You can just start out and train and say, that sounded disrespectful. Please, you know, restate that with a respectful tone or respectful words. And you could just train right on the spot and then just get on with life. You know, of course, there's the kids that are the repeat offenders and you might need to go a little stronger. So you might say, you know, that sounded disrespectful. We value respect in our home. Why don't you take some time to think about how you can demonstrate respect for me and come back and tell me your plan. So either way works, because we are retraining the brain for respect or for the character trait that you're looking at, rather than punishing and in effect, reinforcing the trait we really would like to extinguish. So it's up to parents to help their kids grow their character. And that they don't come out of the chute knowing how to do things perfectly, right? It's our job to train them. And if we can look at it more as an opportunity rather than an inconvenience or a frustration, if we change our mindset a little bit, like, okay, I'm in training mode. I'm coaching my kids on how to develop this trait in their heart.
Yeah, I love that, Lori. And that's one of the things that when I first work with parents or I'm talking to a group, I'll tell them, look, you know what your child is doing wrong. People have no problem identifying the wrong character trait, right? I said, so I want you to think of, you know, pick a character trait that you want your child to work toward, a positive one.
Right.
And that really shifts the whole conversation, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Even within within their home, not just the conversation with me, but the conversation they have with their kids, the conversation they have with their spouse, mm-hmm. the conversation they have when they talk about their children with others.
Yes.
Too.
And it also empowers their parenting.
Oh, yes.
Because now they are focused on what needs to be done. Right?
Yeah.
So that makes a huge difference as well. And it also changes prayer, because then we're praying, Lord, move my child to have a more respectful attitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we want to do is use what I call a replacement prayer. Lord, please replace, right? Remove the impatience and replace it with patience. And I think those are really powerful prayers to have for our kids. So it focuses our prayers, it empowers our parenting, and it changes our kids' heart, because they can see that they are being loved for who they are, and it's not the biggest thing in the world when they do something wrong. It's just something that needs to be trained in, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I think it helps us as parents to look at our child not as a problem,
mm-hmm.
but as part of the solution.
And as a person,
as a person. And I think and I often tell parents, they're, you know, because they want changes immediately, don't we all?
Yes, just want life to be easy.
Yes, I know. Can't wait. I said, think about it. Think of how hard it is for you to change a habit of thought, mm-hmm. a habit of doing. It's hard. It's even harder when you're a kid or a teenager, mm-hmm. because your brain isn't fully developed.
Right.
You don't have the life experience to know that this is going to work.
Right.
You don't have, so those kind of things, I think we forget. We're like, well, it should be. No, it's not easy. That's why I, you know, loved your emphasis on training. That's why it's so important for us to train our children. One of the frustrations I have with some of the parenting advice out there is that it's just tell your kids to stop doing it and expect them to do it. And that sometimes can be prevalent in Christian parenting circles.
Right.
And, you know, I'm like,
it's the process.
Right. And and how's that working for you? You know, it's not. You know, I remember one of my kids had a problem with anger. You know, he's like, I want to stop. I don't know how. And I'm like, and that's it. You know, so many times.
Well, that's what we have to do is help them learn.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And when we just tell them, stop being angry, well, yeah, they should. But how do they do it? Kids really
cannot.
Right.
What do I do with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What'll I do with that? So we forget that a large part of us is, yes, identifying the sin in our children's life. That is huge because kids, like adults, don't want to look at their hearts very closely.
Right.
And that is a you know, one of the things that we are called to do as parents. But the other part is that I think we forget is that training. We need to train their hearts how to see the sin, train their hearts how to get rid of the sin, train their hearts on how to change, how to replace that. And some kids need more help than others, just like some adults do.
That is so true. And where we are most effective is when we work out of relationship. And that's the thing that makes the difference to our child. When we are able to have a good and strong relationship rather than just looking at their behavior, but when we work out of relationship. So, for instance, in my book, The Messy Life of Parenting, and also in my talks, I always talk to parents, because I think this is a really critical message, about relationship and interdependency rather than independency. As a Western mindset, we all believe that we need to raise our children to be independent. But what I think we mean is we want to raise responsible children who are responsible for their actions, for their words, for their stuff, responsible, you know, for the way they interact with other people. We want responsible kids. But when we say independent, that means to separate from us, from the family. And there aren't very many moms or parents who want to raise kids who separate from the family. And I have worked with so many parents where they personally were raised to be independent. They know they don't want that, but yet they're raising their kids to be independent. We want capable, responsible children, but I don't think we want to lose relationship. And I asked one mom who told me that she was raised to be independent, and I said, well, tell me what that looks like now. Here you are a mom yourself, and what's your relationship like with your parents? And she said, well, you know, we all really care about each other and love each other, but if I have an issue or a problem, I would never get a hold of my parents and even tell them about it because they would say, well, you're smart, solve it yourself. And she said, so I don't tell them when things are hard and I don't tell them when things are going great. She said, it's not like I'm keeping a secret. It's just that we don't enter into relationship with each other that way. And she was holding her little guy on her lap as she's telling me this, and she goes, oh my gosh, I don't want this for my son and me, for our relationship. I want him to feel like he can tell me, not in a codependent way, right, but an interdependent way, a way that is healthy and strong. And one of the examples that I give that can, it's a small thing, but it has a huge impact. It's just these simple tweaks that we can make that really strengthen our relationships. And, you know, like you, I'm sure had this same experience, Sarah, with your kids when they were little, because you've got four. And, oh my gosh, it was not a meal until somebody spilled, right? You totally have that?
Totally.
It completely drove me nuts. It was like really making me crazy because it was constant. And it didn't matter if we would do spillage prevention. You like put the cup closer to the center of the table. They have no sense of their body space. Yeah. They knock stuff over all the time, right?
All the time.
And, you know, even if it was a sippy cup, I'm telling you, it still made a mess. I don't know how it happened, but we always were dealing with these spills. So really more for probably my survival than the children's, I started saying, that's okay. Everybody spills. I'll help you clean it up. And I could have said, once I said that's okay, it just kind of, it changed me. There was something, it changed something in me. That's okay. Even if I was saying it through clenched teeth, that's okay. It changed something in me. And then when I would say everybody spills, what that told the kids is mistakes aren't that big of a deal. Everybody makes mistakes. And when mom says that's okay, that lets us know that she can handle our mistakes and she's not going to go crazy when we make one. She's going to be able to manage it. So that's okay. Everybody spills. And then I could have said, go grab a rag and clean it up, because that would encourage responsibility and that would be a good thing to do, right? I mean, natural consequences. There's nothing wrong with that, but I think it raises the bar and it increases our relationship. If more often than not, you can't do it every time because maybe you're nursing a baby when somebody spills, right?
Right.
But more often than not, if you can say, that's okay, everybody spills, I will help you clean it up, then the child knows that mom doesn't go crazy. Mom's able to deal with the spills of life, and she will come alongside me and help me clean it up. And the beautiful thing is when you are within earshot, but not in the same room, and you hear the siblings say to each other, if the younger one spills, that's okay. Everybody spills. I'll help you clean it up. That's the kind of home I want to live in. And it, you know, I mean, you can apply that principle to anything. As your kids get older, that's okay. Everybody crashes the car. We'll help you figure it out, right?
Right.
You know, it just, it can spill over into everything. And really out of just self-survival came this way that we started dealing with problems, which turned out to be really an amazing thing for our family.
I love that. And that's a great way for us to end today's podcast on ways to encourage us as moms and as dads, if you're listening too, that our words are powerful in our households. And the words we speak to our children, even in incidents to do with spilled milk, can build them up or it can tear them down. So I hope that our listeners today will think of the ways that maybe they can change the way they respond to mistakes and help our children to know that they can learn from mistakes, they can recover from mistakes, and that we still love them. You've been listening to You've Got This. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker. I've had with me today Lori Wildenberg. She's a mom. She's the co-founder of 1 Corinthians 13 Parenting Ministry, and she's also has just recently come out with her fifth parenting book, The Messy Life of Parenting. You can visit her at loriwildenberg.com, and if you need that link, just come to my podcast webpage, and I hope that you'll join me next week. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast of You've Got This with Sarah Hammaker. Sign up to receive notification of new podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammaker.com. Until next time, remember, parenting might be hard sometimes, but don't worry, you've got this.